Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Even though we lived in the projects, and even though it was just the two of us, my mom had to work constantly just to feed us. There was rent, bills, food, medical and credit card debt. She had a whole host of financial responsibilities that seemed to overshadow bonding time with her daughter. Which, even as a kid, I understood. I learned at a very young age that the world revolves around money, and without money, you're going to end up on the worst end of things. That's how we ended up homeless and living with my aunt before we settled into Pinnacle Homes. And that's what she was trying to keep from happening ever again. Childcare wasn't really an option. It was too rich for our blood, and it was assumed I would be able to take care of myself by the age of 8. Maybe this is an anomaly for poor neighborhoods, but my routine was to be my own parent. I'd wake up, grab my lanyard with a key, put myself on the bus, take myself off the bus, do homework, fix dinner, clean a little, and go to bed. If Mom worked a double, which she often did between her two jobs, it'd seem like days before I'd see her. The only real parental structure I had was a list of rules on yellow legal paper that Mom would stick to the fridge every morning before she bolted off to her first job. Typically, the rules would stay the same, unless I messed something up that Mom needed to address, like not cleaning the kitchen after I cooked. But sometimes, she'd make a new list with goofy little things written on them to try and make my day a little brighter. Nestled between "don't stay out past 7" and "no long distance calls" would be something dumb like "don't put coins in your ears" or "don't let fish swim backwards on Sundays." Most of them were pulled from dumb American laws she'd read about in one of her checkout line tabloids, but they gave me a giggle all the same. Then one day, I think I was maybe 9, I came home from school and checked the list. It was a new sheet of paper and a new colour of pen, so I was expecting something silly to be waiting for me. Her handwriting was rushed and lopsided, and most of it was exactly the same as the previous bunch of rules. The one exception was the joke rule, which didn't seem very funny. Don't talk to the new neighbour. I didn't get it. I also figured that maybe, judging from how hurried the handwriting looked, that she was in a rush, about to be late, and just bombed the delivery. After all, it had to be a joke of some kind since I hadn't seen anyone new in the neighbourhood. If we indeed had a new neighbour, I was pretty sure I'd catch wind of them, or moving trucks, or something, when I went to and from the bus stop. I didn't think anything of it. I went about my normal routine. Mom worked late and came home after I went to bed, then slept straight through my alarm the next morning when I got up for school. We never crossed paths for me to ask for clarification, so I gave myself closure by checking the apartment to the left of us on my way out. I looked through the window and found it empty. Maybe that was the joke. Regardless, the weird note ended up forgotten somewhere in the middle of math lesson to make room for multiplication tables. A couple of days went by, and then, on my way back from the bus stop, I saw somebody on the sidewalk in front of our building that I'd never seen before. New faces in the projects aren't too strange, since people are in and out all the time. But she stuck out like a sore thumb. Platinum blonde hair, bright scrubs, groceries in a paper bag tucked under her arm. She was young, and didn't seem like she had any kids or anything. Definitely not the type of person that would qualify for Section 8. When she saw me coming out of the corner of her eye, she turned to me and turned on a smile that was better fit for a Colgate commercial. It caught me so off guard that it stopped me. She was slender and pretty, like the models in Mom's magazines, with hot pink lipstick and stunning blue eyes. Not an ounce of her looked like it belonged.
Oh, hello.
Her voice sparkled as much as a smile. Nice day today, isn't it? Or something to that effect. I don't remember exactly what she said, aside from the fact it was an attempt at small talk. And kids suck at small talk, especially me. I stumbled over an answer, but managed to say something all the same, which was enough to please her. Her smile dissolved into a clueless expression soon after, as her eyes scanned the numbers above the stoops, looking for an address. As I watched her, it never occurred to me she could be the new neighbour. She was dressed like a nurse, carrying groceries, and was a lot more put together than the people on my end of the road, me included. What I did figure was that she must have been a home health employee. Living to the right of us was an elderly woman named Miss Dorothy, who went through in-home nurses like most of us go through tissues. She was probably looking for her apartment, or was intentionally dragging her feet, since Miss Dorothy likely had a reputation for not being the most pleasant of people. I slipped past and trudged on home, right by the empty apartment where the lady was standing. I pulled out my lanyard and unlocked the door, and as soon as the lock clicked, I noticed she was staring at me. She looked concerned. Heck, she looked horrified. "Do you live here?" she asked. I smiled awkwardly. "Is your mom home?" she demanded. I shook my head. Yeah, this was definitely not somebody who lived here. Nobody questioned latchkey kids in our neighborhood. "You're alone?" The fact she sounded so aghast made me a little afraid. Mom had always worried that somebody would report her to CPS for negligence one day, even though I was perfectly capable of taking care of myself. My heart sank. I think it showed in my face. "Oh, honey, no. Don't look at me like that. Just, if you need anything, let me know, okay?" "Okay," I whimpered. "I'll be right next door, okay? My name is April." I nodded and went inside. I didn't check if April ever found a way to Miss Dorothy. Days went by, and CPS didn't come pounding on our door, so I figured April must have kept her mouth shut. We did cross paths pretty frequently though, since Miss Dorothy seemed to run April like she'd never run a nurse before. Whenever I come back home from school, April would be trudging down the sidewalk with bags from the Dollar General, and when I'd go outside to play, she'd be heading to her car. If I ran an errand to the corner store, April would usually be there too, buying cat food and milk, and maybe a sandwich from the deli. Sometimes, if she was feeling generous and wasn't in much of a hurry, she'd buy me a sandwich too. If nothing else, we'd walk and talk at the same time. She told me my mom should think about getting a CNA license and told me that I was remarkable for such a young kid. In fact, she lavished me with praise, like she was shocked by the notion that precocious children existed. Then, one day, the list of rules on the fridge changed again. All of them were mundane, except one, written, bolded and underlined. "Stay away from the new neighbor." Again, what new neighbor? On my way to school, I once again checked the empty apartment next to us. I got up on my tiptoes and looked in the window, and sure enough, it was completely abandoned. Maybe Mom was pulling a long con on me to see how confused I could get before she'd give up and tell me it was a prank. I quickly forgot it and continued to pass my days making conversation with April, both when I'd leave for school and when I'd come trudging back home. Sometimes I'd just sit out on my stoop and we'd chat, usually about me and how I was faring. Very, very sparingly, she'd tell me about herself, but only insofar as her job was concerned. It was rare that she'd accidentally let slip a few details about her personal life, like how her boyfriend left her, how she moved into a new apartment, and that she had some nondescript pet named Jade. I didn't know if Jade was a dog or a cat, but I guessed cat based on the pet food she'd buy at the corner store. Time ticked on. The note on the fridge never changed, barring the orders to not talk to the neighbour being circled a couple more times. I didn't bother to ask Mum about it the few times I'd seen her, seeing as I'd written it off as a bad prank by that point. She never brought it up either, so it seemed like the whole thing was dead in the water. Spring break sprang up on us, and even though I usually got to see Mum a little more often during school breaks, she picked up a third job to help fund my birthday gift. It happened occasionally. She had a habit of worrying about me feeling left out and would pick up extra work to get me something, quote, all of the other kids had. That year, it was an N64, which, while exciting, also meant I would be completely alone for the week. No friends, no school, no Mom. Just 7 whole days of seeing her, only if we got up to pee at the same time during the night. I was mostly a hermit, so I didn't see April much either. It was too rainy to go play outside for half the week, and it was too much effort to get up off the couch beyond that. The only time I saw her was after a few days of silence, when there was a knock on the door. It took me by surprise. We never had visitors. But a quick glimpse through the peephole eased my fears. She had a bin of clothes tucked under her arm. Her hair was a little disheveled. She asked if I was okay and if I was enjoying my break, then explained that the washer and dryer next door had spontaneously stopped working. The laundry desperately needed done. Not an exaggeration. I could smell it from where I stood. And she wanted to know if she could come in and use ours real quick. Sure, why not? I was supposed to avoid the imaginary new neighbour, not Miss Dorothy's home health nurse. I offered to help her load everything, or to even do it for her. Both times, she told me no, but she didn't begrudge me standing behind her while she dumped everything into the washer. She didn't bother to sort, and I figured it had something to do with her limited time, the overpowering smell of something fetid, and the brown smears all over everything. My stomach turned, but I figured maybe Miss Dorothy had an accident. After all, if I learned anything from television, it was that old people needed diapers. April stuck around for a few minutes, just long enough to marvel at how clean I kept the place. But the longer she lingered, the more uneasy I became. I don't know why, but there was just something jarring about someone being in the apartment while Mom wasn't there. It slowly dawned on me, I didn't really know this woman at all. And she was being awfully curious about everything, prodding around like she was looking for a sign of weakness. My first instinct was that she was looking for a definitive reason to call CPS, but even that didn't feel wholly right. I just felt uncomfortable. So I told her I wasn't supposed to let strangers in the house, and nervously, passive-aggressively implied she should leave. She was fine with it, but on her way past the kitchen to the front door, she caught a glimpse of the note Mom wrote me. Her brows furrowed and her nose crinkled, but despite the look of disgust, she laughed. I knew she probably saw the part about not talking to the new neighbour first, given how it was circled and underlined. Maybe she thought Mom was overprotective. As soon as she walked out the door, I closed it, locked the chain, and told her through the gap that I'd put everything in the dryer and bring it to her once it was done. I also begged her not to tell my mom I let her in. I didn't really give her an opportunity to answer before I closed the door, locked the locks, and decided to meditate in front of the television. But I was a kid of my word. Right as my nerves began to settle in the warm embrace of an afternoon of Nicktoons, the buzzer for the washer went off. Then, an hour later, the dryer. It took a strange amount of courage to pick up the laundry bin once everything was folded and fresh. But I was committed to being a responsible kid and told April I'd bring everything to her. I grabbed the laundry, my lanyard, locked the door on my way out, and walked a whole 2 yards to Miss Dorothy's. I knocked. No answer. Maybe April was at the corner store. I looked around, waited a few minutes, then knocked again with the same result. Annoyed, I pounded a little harder, on the verge of calling for April herself, when I heard the chain scratching against the other side. The door opened, and a man stood in the doorway. He was tall, stubbly, in powder blue scrubs. He was holding a syringe, like I'd interrupted something. At first, he looked angry, then confused, then worried when he noticed that I was just as bewildered as him. If I squinted into the dark behind him, I could see Miss Dorothy in a living room, seated in a recliner. She glared at me. Nobody knew why there was some idiot kid standing on their stoop with a bunch of clothes. When I asked for April, he seemed lost. I tried to explain that April was Miss Dorothy's home health nurse, and he replied that he was Miss Dorothy's home health nurse and had been for over a month. No, there wasn't anyone named April who covered for him on his days off, and no, nobody had been by Miss Dorothy's apartment except him that day. The more I pressed, the more concerned he seemed to get. After taking a moment to ditch the needle, he came back to ask for more details. What did she look like? Where did I meet her? Was there anyone else in the neighborhood who may have had in-home care? I blinked tears of embarrassment out of my eyes as I answered. He told me he wished he could be of more help before apologizing and closing the door. I trundled away, laundry in hand. Embarrassment became fear. I kept thinking back to how odd I felt while April was in the apartment, and my heart beat faster. When we first met, she said if I needed anything, she'd be right next door. But one apartment was empty, and she didn't work for Miss Dorothy after all. Faster still, April was just some stranger, and everything she told me seemed to be lies. But what was she getting out of lying to some kid? I walked straight past my apartment to the vacant one next door, and, climbing up on my tiptoes, peeked in the window yet again. Empty. It was still empty. I left the laundry on the stoop anyway, and sprinted back home. I locked the doors, I locked the windows, I ran up to my bedroom and locked myself in. To add one more layer of security between me and April, I climbed into my closet and pulled it shut. And there I stayed, vowing not to move until Mom came home from work. There was a part of me who was convinced April was some kind of ghost and that the evening would end like a horror movie. A more sensible part of my brain tried to justify things however it could. When my mom and I first moved into the projects, we didn't have any furniture and I just slept on blankets in the floor. So maybe April was just rebounding from a bit of bad luck. It was also possible that the first day we met, she misspoke and she actually lived 2 apartments away, maybe 3. Maybe saying she was right next door was meant figuratively and not literally. After what felt like an eternity of waiting, I started hearing knocking from downstairs. On the door, on the windows, and I swear, it was creeping closer. The walls were thin in certain places, so I kept trying to figure out if the footsteps I was hearing on the stairs were in my apartment or Miss Dorothy's, or if the banging I was hearing on the walls was maintenance working on the vacant apartment or somebody trying to flush me out. I curled up in a ball and held my breath, sitting on the floor of my closet and rationalizing my fears. Until I heard something in my room. Not a person, not a banging sound, not even a voice. There was someone jostling the doorknob quietly, which I almost convinced myself was me accidentally knocking into something, and then a quieter noise. It was the sound of paper being slid under a door. My closet had slats, so if I angled my head correctly, I could actually see some of the note on my bedroom floor. It was on yellow legal paper, just like my mom's note. Maybe it was Mom. As quietly as I could, I slid the closet door open and silently slipped out to fetch it. It was written in hurried scrawls and looked like Mom's rushed writing. But it wasn't a list. It was just a word. Hello. I froze as I realized that I felt like I was being watched, and that the gap beneath my door was high enough to look into the room. The idea that the note had been bait flashed in my mind as I pressed my head down on the floor and worked up the courage to look under the door and into the hallway, right dead into the sparkling blue eye of April. I could even see the corner of a smile, bright and white and ready for Aquafresh primetime. My gazes met, her eyes widened like a cat about to pounce. She pushed the weight into the door. Gotcha, sweetie. I screamed and pounded against the wall between mine and Miss Dorothy's apartment, wailing and shrieking. I stomped and yelled and fumbled for anything heavy enough to do some damage. As I heard April putting all of her weight on a door that I was sure wouldn't hold, I threw open my window and shrieked into the ether for help. April, silent, kept throwing herself at the barrier between us. When I heard the first snap, I took a look down from the window and to the roof over our stoop. It was small, slanted, and too far away to be a safe jump. But it was still safer than launching myself all the way down to the concrete. Without overthinking it, I pulled myself out into the evening air, tumbled down and clasped to whatever I could to keep myself from rolling the rest of the way down. The shingles were rough, like asphalt, and I felt the road burn forming on my shoulder. I felt something snap in one of my wrists, but adrenaline is a hell of a thing when you think you're about to be murdered. I didn't see April leave, as distracted as I was trying not to fall. I just balanced the best I could where I was, and wailed and cried and screamed until Miss Dorothy's actual nurse burst out of the apartment. He tried desperately to calm me down, telling me he called the police as soon as I started yelling and promising he'd find a way to get me down. He tried to calm me enough that I'd tell him where my mom worked so he could call her too, but I couldn't stop hyperventilating long enough to speak. The next few days were a blur. Somehow, my mom got away with leaving me at home by myself, and I think it may have been the home health nurse's doing. I remember people asking a lot of questions, but I really didn't know anything about April aside from what she looked like and the fact she had been dumped and had a pet named Jade. Faces started blending together, time became meaningless, and I remember more about going to a kindly child's therapist after all was said and done than I remember the actual outcome. It's like everything was blotted painlessly out of my mind before I reached adulthood. This would normally be where the story concludes, an anticlimactic end with no resolution. There wouldn't really be a reason to tell it, at least not on this grand of a scale. Hell, I probably wouldn't have even remembered to talk about it, period, if not for my mom. She had a very close call with ovarian cancer this past year, which loosened the lips about quite a few old stories about when she was a kid, I was a kid, or weird things about our family. Maybe it's her attempt to bring closure to us both. Either way, it's the reason that, apropos of nothing, she nonchalantly asked me if I remembered April the other day. Apparently, I didn't recall a lot of the aftermath because Mom specifically went out of her way to keep me from finding out about it. She knew I wouldn't be thrilled with the fact that April was never caught, for instance. She had made a beeline out of the back door while everyone was distracted and never came back. She also guessed I wouldn't have taken it well if I'd known the notes, including the neighbor rule, didn't come from her. She'd actually stopped rewriting the rules because she figured I knew them well enough, so the notes had probably been written by April. The police investigation found that April had been letting herself in for a while, courtesy of a fault in a window that maintenance apparently knew about and never disclosed. Even if you locked it, it would be open. So, during the night, she would sneak in, going through our stuff, potentially leaving notes. Nobody is sure what the notes were supposed to accomplish, but they're pretty sure it was a part of some kind of grooming attempt or scare tactic. Or maybe she was just crazy and they had no purpose. That's Mom's theory. Additionally, the empty apartment next to us wasn't empty at all. According to the housing authority's records, as well as the rumor mill and the local news, it was rented out to somebody named April Gallant, who police figured out pretty quickly didn't actually exist. This woman managed to get into state housing using an assumed name and fake information, and even claimed to have a daughter. Mom never found out who the daughter was, but she had her suspicions. You see, when they inspected the apartment, behind a locked door and an unfinished upstairs bedroom, they found the remains of a little girl, around my age. She hadn't been dead long, probably shortly after April allegedly moved in, but she seemed to have been beaten in the past and was so malnourished that she was basically a skeleton. Dark skin, dark hair. She definitely didn't seem like somebody who'd be related to a blonde, blue-eyed girl. And after what happened with me, they concluded that the girl had been a victim of abduction. They looked for anything they could that would help with identification. But the only thing they found in the room with her was an empty bowl, cans of dried up cat food, and a collar with tags hanging on the closet. Unsurprisingly, the collar was their best lead. They're still looking for anyone, missing a child named Jade.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.